Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Hey, Ben Crenshaw. What a fantastic day we're having. I hope you are, too. It's absolutely spectacular. And I was going to hold off on doing the weather forecast, Ben, because we're waiting for Adam Shupak to give us a jingle. He's the first guest on the show. So we're just going to have to wait here for a couple of minutes while I do, yes, the weather forecast. And it is going to be one of those glorious days. Today through Wednesday on Oahu, we're going to have windward and Mauka areas, sometimes mostly cloudy, scattered showers. Leeward side, partly cloudy, isolated showers. The high today, oh, you guessed it, 91 degrees, maybe even 92 in Kapolei. The low, 71 to 77. I'm going for 71. I just sleep better, don't you? Trade winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Kauai, today through Wednesday, windward and Mauka, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. I'm seeing a trend here. The leeward side, partly cloudy with isolated showers. Just be ready for another hot day on Kauai. It's going to be 85 to 91 degrees. The low, 71 to 77. The trades, 10 to 20. There's, yeah, scattered showers on Maui, mainly before noon, partly sunny with a high near 77. Let's go to Maui. Breezy with east-northeasterlies, 11 to 17, gusts as high as 24, and a chance of precipitation at 30%. And on the Big Island, Hawaii Island, mostly sunny, a high near 61. Really? It seems like a typo. Calm wind becoming north around 6 miles per hour. And the low tonight about 46. They must be talking about, you know, like up country when it gets really close. I think we've got him on right now. Adam Shupak, senior writer, Golf Week author, Dean Beeman, golf's driving force. He's got a master's of journalism at Columbia University, the Graduate School of Journalism. Wow, Adam. He's not in yet? Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, so I'm going to do tea times. Can we give him a jingle? You know, I don't understand. He asked me about when to call in, and I said 1 o'clock Eastern. I sure hope he understood that it was 1 o'clock Eastern. This is very strange. Okay. Let's see now.
Okay, hold on just a minute, Adam, okay? Hold on.
All right. All right. There he is. I hear him. I hear him in the distance. Thank you, Nani, for being there to rescue me. Emotional rescue. Adam Shupak, are you there?
I am.
Awesome.
Aloha.
Aloha. Adam Shupak is the senior writer for Golf Week magazine. He's the author of Dean Beeman, Golf's Driving Force. You know, master's journalism at Columbia University, Graduate School of Journalism. Wow. You spent a lot of time to write for Golf Mag, you know, that Golf Week magazine.
Yeah, it's been a fun career. I love what I do, just like I know you do.
Yes.
And great to get to travel around watching all the great golf and talking to the players and all the people in the world of golf. Love coming to the Sony and getting to do the live show with you for the first time.
Oh, God. Are you coming back?
You know, it's too early to say. Oh. I hope so. I'd love to go back, but we got to see how the budget is. Got to talk to the editor.
Yes. The old budget, right?
Yeah.
A couple of things. And, you know, this is sad news. And it seems like lately we've been losing so many of our greats in the game who play. And in this case, Ron Green Sr., a legend in golf writing, yeah, at the Charlotte Observer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he went to 60 consecutive Masters. That's just remarkable to think of. Like, I feel like I've been to a lot and I'm at like maybe 14 or 15 that I've covered. Just do 60 is just incredible. They had his own parking spot there, and you know, the traditions carried on. Of course, I'm sure you had his son Ron Green Jr. We just call him Junior on the show plenty
of
time.
Yes.
You know, he's one of the best in the business these days. Learned from his dad. It's incredible how that can you can pass from one generation to the next. But yeah, Ron Green Sr. I wouldn't say I knew him all that well because he was a little bit before my time, but I did call him on a couple of occasions to talk to him about some golf stories that I was working on that were during his era, and he was so knowledgeable. I've got a copy of his master's book with all his many of his columns from covering over the years that I've read over and over, and he had a great way with words.
You said it was your master's book, the book that he wrote in your hands is now dog-eared. I love that.
Yeah. I've taken it around with me a bunch of places.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't take good enough care of my books. I need to do a better job of that.
Well, you know, it just shows you how much you appreciate them and how close they are to your life. And as you wrote, condolences to Ron Green Jr., the senior writer at Global Golf Post, another great man. Now, we're going to talk about, you know, your conversation with someone, but I want to ask you about Rory McIlroy losing the head of his 9-iron. Have you seen that happen?
Not too often like that, where the ball then goes on the green. That never happened to me. I've had the driver head fly farther than my ball. That's my claim to fame when my club breaks. The head usually goes farther than my ball goes.
I love that. You know, but as you said, it was amazing that he got on the green. And he was amazed that he got on the green. He was like, huh? At first he looks at, you know, wait a minute. And then all of a sudden he realizes that it landed in a really good spot. And he's like incredulous. Did this really happen? Yeah. And following Rory this season has been, what are your thoughts? And when he was, and I've said this before, when he was younger, you know, he just played outside of himself. You know, he was just, I don't know how to describe that being. You know,
I think there's some scar tissue, Danielle, from the U.S. Open and what happened there. And when I look back at that, I mean, it's something I noticed watching him as it all kind of happened. But he didn't have that bounce in the step that he, you know, when he's feeling it. And he knows it's going to happen. I mean, there's nothing better than watching him kind of bounce along the fairways. And he just looked a little tight in every shot he hit after he took the lead. I felt like I think the worst thing that happened to him was getting the lead when he did. I think it was the birdie, the two-putt birdie at the par 4 13th that put him up into the lead. And he just, after that, he never really hit, other than he hit a nice shot into 16, but then he had the three-putt there. You know, he didn't look comfortable closing. And I think the same thing is kind of happened last week in the Irish Open. And, you know, the Irish Open might not be the U.S. Open to the rest of us, but to him,
exactly,
to win it in Northern Ireland at Royal County Down, one of the great golf cathedrals in the world, I think it meant as much, if not more to him than that U.S. Open. And, you know, I mean, credit to Rasmus Højgaard. I mean, the way he finished was incredible. He had, you know, holds a bunker shot, chips in. So a lot of things, it kind of felt a little Greg Norman-esque, you know, like when Norman would lose to Paul Azinger holding a bunker shot at the Memorial, or, you know, it's just some of the ways that Greg Norman ended up losing some majors. It just seemed like this was, that last week was kind of one of those things where, you know, Rory didn't play poorly. It just, somebody went out and had a couple, you know, couple miracles go in their favor and was able to get the deal done.
Some golfers are chasers. They like to be like in the hunt of the guy in front of him. And in that hunt, they get this impetus. You know, it's just like, yes, I'm going to bring him down. And as you said, when he got the lead, he was no longer hunting. He was like in survival mode. He was being chased. Yeah. And that's
he was just protecting and trying to get to the house.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a really bad mental state to be in. If I mean, and you know, our supposition here is that we know what mental state he's in. Danielle, okay, so here you are. You're having a chit chat with what was his name? Oh yes, Jim Furyk. I used to get a kick out of the fact if you're following Jim, he's going to spit. So be ready for whatever. You know, he just did. He was just a spitter. But he always has this sort of this way about him, not at all trying to be politically correct. So you were asking him about what? About the U.S. president, the President's Cup, U.S. team, European team, and just trying to put it all together. It would be nice if we had a competition and it wasn't the U.S. dominating every year. So kind of pick it up from there.
We were just, sitting on a bench, kind of talking about the President's Cup. He knew I was interviewing him, but I felt like we were in this gray area where we were just two guys talking about, and so I really didn't, it wasn't even a question. It was just a comment. When I think about it in retrospect, I don't know if I would have said this to too many other people. I just happened to have a really good relationship with Jim over the years. We live in the same town now and see each other, but I've interviewed him for years and he's very thoughtful with his answers and stuff. And I just said to him, I said, don't hate me, but I kind of hope you guys lose. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, you're an American. Come on. You got to be. Why are you? And I kind of said, it's nothing personal. Like, it's not. I hope you win. But this event really needs the international team to win. It's 12 and 14 times they played. The internationals have won once. That was 1998. It's been so long. And the last one was very competitive. It was somewhat competitive towards the end. It seems like when they play these road matches in South Korea in 15 and 19 in Australia, when the internationals had a really good chance to win, they've been closer. But I've also been at one where the U.S. almost won on Saturday. The singles on Sunday almost didn't even matter. And so it's just been so one-sided that people aren't interested. And I kind of, when I was writing about it, I compared it to, I turned on Notre Dame playing Eastern Michigan. And I said to my wife, I'm not going to watch, it was 7-0 Notre Dame already. I'm like, I don't want to watch this game. It's going to probably be 56-3. And we missed this great upset, Eastern Michigan beat Notre Dame. It was probably the greatest win in their program history. And, everybody loves to see an upset. And I think that's kind of, we need an Eastern Michigan performance. We need the international team. They need a victory in this event. Otherwise I think already it's difficult that it's in football season, and it just doesn't have the panache of the Ryder Cup. I always describe it as Ryder Cup Light, or the stepsister event. And it doesn't have the history.
No, you're right.
Compared to the Ryder Cup, but the biggest thing is it just hasn't been close like the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup was the President's Cup until Jack Nicklaus said, we need to make this event, instead of Great Britain and Ireland, it needs to be all of Europe, and all of a sudden it became this great event. Before then, nobody cared about it. And I think this thing could really flip, because there's so many good Asian players, there's so many good players in the rest of the world. Like, if you think, there are a lot of good European players, but the rest of the world has a bigger and even larger group to pull from. And so I think this event's going to continue to get better. But if you have the U.S. win, say, the next three, I don't know. I just think it's going to be tough. And I think a lot of people would like to see it become a co-ed event. And all of a sudden, the international team might destroy us. You add in Lydia Ko and some of the great Korean golfers and girls, ladies from Japan. I mean,
yeah,
the Korda sisters, all of a sudden. It could be pretty, I think it would be really, I actually like that concept, but for the meantime, I just would like to see this better event. And Jim was a little offended by my comment. And I probably wouldn't have said that to Tiger Woods if we were talking, but it was somebody that I knew real well. And so he took me to task a bit, but he did it in such a, it wasn't. A lot of people have said that he lost his cool. I've seen these stories, these headlines, how Jim Furyk lost his cool, and it was nothing like that, or that he was outraged. It was very what he said, which I can't say on the air.
No, you can't.
it was in a playful manner, and like I laughed, and he was smiling, and I told the story not to say that. Look, Jim Furyk's really mad. The point of retelling the story and sharing it with the world was, Jim Furyk wants to win. He's
yes.
not going there. This is not some goodwill mission. This
no.
Is,
yes, you're out.
You know, Team USA. They want to win this thing.
Yeah,
that's all they care about. They're, you know, whether this thing continues to be one-sided. That's not their thing to worry about. That's the international team's problem. Not Jim Furyk.
Yeah, and this is from your article that you wrote, and here's the quote. This is from Jim Furyk. Did you ever play anything in your entire life as a competitor? Because I'd rather you not even say good luck than say it and not even mean it. Do you know how hard, how many hours the captains work to try to win these matches? Do you know how hard and how much effort the players, how hard they take when they didn't play well? I mean, he's like on a roll.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
I've seen grown men cry.
Yes, exactly. And obviously, you know, this is something let's go out and they take it all very seriously, like everybody does. And whenever they're in competition, and certainly these guys. But I totally understand, Adam, what you were trying to get through to him is like, you know, we need this to be a competition. And between the two factions, you know, and the Europeans and the, or rather, you know, the world against the United States, they need to beat us.
And I loved that he, you know, chewed, you know, used a couple of profanities to make his point with me. And it just showed, like, I want to see a fiery captain who's going to, like, lead these guys. And because Jim Furyk, he's so even keeled and mild mannered, and it was a little, it just felt out of characteristic him using that type of language. But it also, you know, I think, and then he did say, you can quote me on that, because like I said, I think we had transitioned out of an interview phase, and we're just two guys talking between themselves at the water cooler more than like it wasn't, this didn't happen in a press conference setting or, you know, it wasn't like that. If he hadn't have said, you could quote me on that, I think I might not have even written it. I would have just kept it as something that maybe I would have told you about on the side type thing. But, it was, you know, and he did send me, we have corresponded about the article because it did sort of explode that. I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that nobody like reached out to me. I don't think anybody called him for any comment. It's just, they just took what I said and kind of spun it in a way that I don't think was accurate about him being outraged or, you know, losing his cool. Like, but Jim said, the article's spot on. That's exactly what I said. And he just said, you know, the headline, he didn't love the headline. He thought the headline was a little bit clickbaity or implied that he was angry. And, those things, I guess, sometimes get lost in translation.
Yeah, but you know, it's great that you have that relationship with him. You can come, you know, a lot of people would not have had the moxie to go, you know, hey, I hope you lose because we need the severe. Wait a second, you know.
Now
Now, here's Adam Scott for President's Cup, which, by the way, is next week. Asking him what the most difficult loss has been, kind of cold, don't you think? And then he, you know, you were talking to him about who would be the secret weapon on the international side.
I loved his answer.
Right?
I loved his answer.
And what was his answer?
I might be. Adam Scott might be the secret weapon.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't played well the last few times, and he said if he doesn't play well, you know, he doesn't think they should even bother to have him on the team again. So he's feeling some pressure and also, I think, telling his teammates, like, guys, just hop on my back. I'm going to take you. We're going to do this. He's been in 11 of these, and he's never won. He was on his very first one was 98 when they, 2008 2003 when they tied in South Africa, memorably, when Tiger and Ernie had the playoff until and it wasn't settled at dark, so they made it a tie. You know, he has never won, and I think that is something that has stuck in his craw, and he is tired of losing at this event, and he's going to do everything in his power to help the team win this year.
Yeah, totally cool. Now, I've taken you 5 minutes longer than you said you could probably stay on. So I have a feeling you're off to do something wonderful with the family today.
Oh, yeah. We're sitting by the water and enjoying some lunch when I called in.
Nice. Adam Shupak, senior writer, Golf Week magazine. He's the author of Dean Beeman, Golf's Driving Force. You should pick it up. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Aloha. We'll talk soon, I hope. Okay. Let's get, we're going to get a call from Claude Brousseau, PGA Master, Director of Player Development at Wailea Golf Academy at Wailea Golf Club on Maui. He's traveling home to the U.S., and there's many, many stops on the journey here. So have we heard, perchance, yet from Claude Brousseau? Yes, we have heard from Claude. So we're going to have Claude on right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
I want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun. Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
How do the pros keep their bodies fit? With professional stretching routines from Stretch Lab Hawaii. Our one-on-one assisted stretching sessions are designed to improve your flexibility and swing. Our highly experienced flexologists tailor each session to your needs so you can move better, feel better, and play better. Visit our studios at Kahala Mall, Kailua, and Ward Center. Stretch Lab. Live long, golf strong. Mention The Golf Club for half off your 50-minute stretch and mobility assessment at Stretch Lab Hawaii.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box, see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come, join the aloha at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
Here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
All right. Claude Brousseau, PGA Master, Director of Player Development, Wailea Golf Academy at Wailea Golf Club on Maui, Golf Channel Academy Lead Instructor, Golf Digest Certified Instructor. You know, the list of this man's accomplishments and dedication to his craft is long. So let's get right into it. Welcome into the clubhouse, Claude.
Aloha, Danielle. Thank you so very much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, what lovely destination have you dropped into?
That was so great, Danielle. I went to Portugal first. I played there two great golf courses. One is called Westcliff, right on the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow.
In about 3-4 miles from there. The other one is called Praia del Rey. Two different golf courses. So we spent about 5 days there. And then a little visiting of doing something else in golf. So we went and visit Porto. And then from there, I went back to France. I played two really nice golf courses. One is called Golf PGA Je Voudrais, the OS Challenge Tour there for at least 8 years. So great quality course. And about a couple miles from there, there's a golf course called Leary. And this next week, they will host the first stage of the Q School for the DP Tour. So I had nice weather while I was there and played very nice golf courses.
And challenging golf courses.
Yes, Danielle.
Yeah.
But you know, as you know so well, golf is always challenging. A little bit more when you travel abroad because the conditions are so different.
And exactly. And so, what is it about when you go traveling? A lot of folks make their destination a golf destination, and you've got all your stuff with you. You've never been there. What's the most important skill for a golfer going on a journey?
Great question, Danielle. As you know, I always, you know, strive to help the golfer to have a good time. So one of the first thing they need to do is they need to be adaptable. So that's the most important skill. They need to adapt to the situation. And then the second one is be committed on every shot. So we can go a little bit about that if you want. So be adaptable. What I mean by that is the condition of the course will be totally different than where you normally play. As example, in Portugal and France, the ball flies shorter. So the distance with the same club is not, let's say, the same.
Hmm.
Then the type of grass that you will play on the green is different than when we play in Hawaii or where your listener play at home. The texture of the sand is different. The green could be either softer or harder than the green that you work on. So what you need to do is be able to make multiple adjustments in your game. As an example, I will say probably you will have to use a stronger club for the same distance. So what I mean by that is if you're using a 6, but you need to use a 7,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. That's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Then you have to be ready to have an intimidation factor, I will say, when you play the course for the first time, because you may have blind shot and you don't really know where the ball will go. So my recommendation is the first and only expectation you should have is having fun on the course.
Oh, yes. That's my belief in life. You know, if you're going to spend 4 hours on a golf course with friends, you know, hey, just your goal has to be have a good time together and not take the game too seriously. You know, certainly you want to play well, but if things aren't working out, you know, you just got to laugh because otherwise.
Correct, Danielle. And then, like, you know, I like to use the acronym GOLF, Game of Life First, G-O-L-F,
yeah.
Game of Life First.
Yeah.
So if you travel abroad, first, you should be grateful that you can do it. Second, it's embrace the diversity and the difference because that's where you go there. And then I like it. We met that couple, and he says, you know what, my favorite hole every time I travel is number 19.
The 19th hole. Yes.
Yeah. He says my favorite hole is 19 because I met new people. I can have a drink with them, and it's all about having fun.
That's it. Yes.
Go ahead.
No. I just in total agreement with you. Go ahead.
Correct. So as a strategy, though. If I call that play you stock shot. Stock shot means, let's say, Danielle, you're a fader of the ball, but you just play that shot. Just play with your game. Then I will say aim for the middle of the green because you don't know the green that much, so aim for the middle of it. And, you know, you have to expect that bounce. So let's say, like, the first hole at Westcliff, fairway appear really wide, but it's divide in two, and then if you're not far enough to the left with your drive shot, like I thought I had perfect drive, it looks good, and then when I got there, it was still in the fairway, but 25 yards right of where I wanted. So you have to remember that in golf, every good shot is not necessarily rewarded, and just enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like when you talk about being committed.
Yes, because that's a skill that we can have at home, but I think that skill in priority becomes a lot higher. Like number one is be adaptable. Number two will be committed. What I mean by that is it's tough for the brain. Let's say you got 100, let's say for Claude, 135 yards at home is my 8-iron. But I get over there, it's 135, but I need to play a solid 7 to get there. So your brain play tricks with you. So that's what I mean to be committed, get your number, and play your swing, and commit to it. Then another way you can, the temptation to aim for the flag, let's say, is pretty strong when you want to get the ball close to the hole, but you need to stay committed. Or let's say, I just want the middle of the green here. And so what I will say, especially in the new golf courses that you have not played, don't let a bad shot undermine your confidence. It's just part of playing golf, one or two bad shots.
Give yourself a break.
Correct, Dan, yeah. But when you go like that, it makes you appreciate the skill of the best player in the world, how and they're unbelievably good at adapting, because they first, I mean, you travel, like, okay, going from Maui to Europe, that's a long trip, you know. And then you get over there, you're 12 hours upside down. Then those ladies and gentlemen, they do that every week. I mean, I don't think the general public watching golf on TV, seeing those athletes, they realize how much demanding that game is when you have to travel different time zone, you're on the plane, and then it doesn't, if you don't travel with your private jet, they can lose your bag too, you know, and then you get some stress, and there's a lot of people at the airport, they need to go to TSA like you and I, and so it's a very demanding way to make a living.
Absolutely. Until you're like at the level of, I'm just Tiger Woods, and you've got your own fleet of jets that can take you whenever you want to go and whenever you're ready. I was just thinking, you know, are there caddies for hire at some of these golf courses that you've been to, so that you could have somebody who knows the course and give you a little bit of input?
At the course that I played this time, no, there were not caddy available. But I know in some trips when I went to Dominican Republic, I had caddies when I went, and not this time, but, you know, in my lifetime.
Yeah.
When I went to Bali, we had caddy there. So that would be a good advice. Thank you for bringing that up. If you can inquire about, is there caddy available? Because obviously that will help a lot.
Yeah, they'll know the course and give you your best shot at making a good shot the way you'd like to, you know, so that you feel like you've accomplished something. And then you learn, too, so much. It's fun having somebody, instead of feeling like lost in the jungle, where am I going? Yeah, I love it. So how long did it take you to... Let's go. So go ahead. Yeah, please.
How long? No, go ahead. What was the question, Daniel?
How long did it take for you to fly from here, let's say, to Portugal?
Okay, so I left a Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Then I got into the accommodation in Westcliff at Portugal on Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m.
Wait a minute, you left Sunday?
Yep.
2 days?
This time, yes, to get there, because the flight, it was kind of complicated this time. But normally, let's say when I work, as you know, I work in France for 10 years.
Yeah.
And normally I will do, let's say, Maui, Los Angeles, Paris. And this is 18 hours in the plane.
Wow.
So you have to, yes. It's a long trip. But it's worth it, and like, you can have fun. Yeah. But coming back to the caddy thing, like, I play with Anne-Marie, my wife, and then I kind of help her to stay committed. So let's say the partner you play with knows your game. If you go with some, your partner, let's say, then it's kind of a having a caddy when they're not available. I will tell her, okay, you need to commit on you know, this distance on your club. And forget the illusion, you know, the optical illusion that it appears a lot longer than, let's say, 130. So just having your partner helping you to say, okay, get the club for 130 and commit and play.
Yeah, that's really, you know, committed to your shot. Well, and that's also, isn't that also a mental factor? I mean, how keeping yourself in that space and not doubting yourself?
Oh, yes, Danielle, because the biggest obstacle on the course is doubt. You better to commit on the wrong decision than be, I'll call that, washy-washy over the club. Oh, I'm not too sure that's the club. I'm not too sure I am there. I mean, I call that anyways. I will swing anyway.
Yeah.
That's not a good strategy in golf, Danielle.
No. Yeah. And I'm often in that space. Like, is this the best? I'm just going to hit it. Yeah.
It rarely produces good shots.
No, you're right. You're right. And then when I'm on the green, I feel I'm at home. That's the one thing that I feel really comfortable at. I haven't gotten comfortable with my driver at all. Irons are different. What is it about the driver? Is it I guess we could talk forever on this subject.
Yes, we could, but I would make it pretty short and clear, Danielle. You know me. What I mean by that is the driver is the most challenging club for everybody in the bag. And here's the main reason. First, it's the longest club. You know, the length of the shaft is the longest in your bag. It's the club with the less loft. We don't talk the putter here. I'm talking long swing or long club, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the club in the bag with the less loft. Then it's the club that you move the fastest because of the physics of the club. So the driver just magnified the errors or the flaws that you have in your swing with your, let's say, 7-iron, but you don't realize it that much. The last reason will be because with the driver, the ball travels farther. So an object that travels farther has a better chance to disperse. And lastly, it will be because when the players, most of them, Danielle, when they have the driver in their hands, they just think too much about how far they want to hit the damn ball. And they should focus more on, okay, I should make a solid contact and don't care that much about how far it goes. And then they will realize it goes farther. So you're in the club of like, everybody who plays the game, that driver is the most challenging club for the reason I just explained to you.
Thank you. You've made it so much. And knowing that I shouldn't focus on the distance is a huge insight because, of course, everybody's like, okay, I've got my driver. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to go 200 yards or whatever. And, you know, it doesn't. Because I don't hit it right, because I'm hoping to slam it, you know, and get there.
Correct.
Wow. Claude Brousseau, thank you.
The last thing I will say quickly, Daniel, is that let's say you play and you're struggling with your driver, because for distance, the most important thing is hitting the middle of the club face. So keep the driver in the bag, take you 3 wood, let's say, and then probably because there is more loft, so more forgiveness, you won't be so focused on distance, your ball will be further in play.
Claude Brousseau, when are you taking students again? Are you going to rest for a while first?
I'm ready. I got some golfer, and I'm thankful for that. Monday morning, I'm back on the tee full day. I love it.
Yes, and tomorrow's the first day of fall. Yay! So it's hopefully cooling off a little bit for us. Claude Brousseau, PGA Master Director of Player Development, Wailea Golf Academy at Wailea Golf Club, on Maui. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse. It's good talking to you. It's been a while. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Danielle. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Aloha.
Aloha. Mike Johnson, 29 years at Golf Digest, senior equipment editor, hot list team member. We're going to talk with him after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamila Road on the Eva side. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Aloha Powers, it's darn hot fall sale. Yes, fall's tomorrow. It's Aloha Powers' darn hot fall sale. Riding mowers from homeowner to supersized landscapers, they're in stock. Mower accessories galore, available. Mow it, blow it, bag it, done. Let your equipment do the work. Don't let your back get hurt. It's still fire season, so protect your property. Get everything cut back. You'll protect yourself. You protect your neighbor. We ship off island, and so newest shipments are with the latest features arriving daily, and we can send them on to you. Aloha Power Equipment, Iwile, next to the Costco gas station in Waipahu. Aloha Power Equipment, we put power at your fingertips.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Share our home with need a gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay golf gift certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
Got my new book, Three Tips to Play Better Golf. Practice, practice, practice. Now back to Danielle Tucker.
Mike Johnson, senior equipment editor, hot list team member. Welcome into the clubhouse.
Well, I feel like I'm one up from last time in that I remembered to actually call in.
You know, and the last time we talked, I lost 2 years on my computer, so I don't have 23 or 24, but is it possible that we haven't had a conversation since 22?
I don't know about that, but it's probably been at least a year, which is way too long.
Yes, it is. So I figured out you've been with Golf Digest for 29 years?
Yeah, we don't want to let that get around.
No, no. No, and I won't tell you how long I've been in radio. So, you know, so much discussion over the golf ball rollback. Was it a year ago that the USGA and RNA actually formalized their decisions?
Yeah, you know, earlier this year, about a year ago. It's interesting, you know, they have a lot of runway here for the elite level play in 2028 and for everybody else in 2030. But some dominoes have yet to fall, which could really change the landscape. My partner in equipment crime, Mike Stachura, and I spend a lot of time with the USGA about this. We have a very open dialogue, and they are, you know, they are hell-bent on doing this, but there's a big but. The PGA Tour has not come out and said they will adopt it. Oh. And if the PGA Tour does not adopt it, all bets are off in my mind.
Wow. Now, and why is that?
Well, I think at our base, everyday golfers want to play by the rules of golf. Even if we you know, everyone says, oh, we don't play by the rules of golf as it is. We take mulligans, we take jimmies, whatever. But we don't want to blatantly cheat. I just don't think everyday golfers want to blatantly cheat. And playing a non-conforming ball or club or whatever will show that. We saw that with the Callaway ERC2 two decades ago. They promised extra yards. It was non-conforming. They said, ah, buy it anyway. You'll have fun. Nobody bought it. So the key, though, is if the PGA Tour says, you know what, we think this is a bridge too far. We're not going to go that route. I think it gives everyone kind of permission to not go that route, too.
Got it. Yeah, and that's so the rollback would go in effect for the elite competitors like the PGA Tour in 2028. For everybody else, it would be January of 2030. And how much of a rollback are we talking about? How much do you lose in distance?
Well, if according to the USGA, and it's basically been pretty much confirmed by independent academics who know golf and golf mechanics and aerodynamics and all that goes with it, it'll probably be 10 to 15 yards off the tee at the elite male level. And it'll be anywhere from 1 to 4 yards for the everyday player at the, you know, recreational level. Now, is 1 to 4 yards a tragedy? I don't know. I mean, I think if you go in the cage during the fitting and someone gets you 2 yards on a driver, you're pretty impressed. What I do think, though, is assuming it goes through, there is an opportunity for PGA professionals and club fitters to say, hey, look, we know you lost some yards here, and that's really unfortunate. But through club fitting and instruction, we can get you those yards back and then some. And I think how they can, the ones that convey that message the best are going to be well positioned.
Wow. Okay. Now, wasn't this whole rollback thing to preserve the length of the golf courses so that we weren't overwhelming the golf course by going too far with these golf balls?
I don't know if it's overwhelming it per se. I think what gets lost in the discussion a lot is the USGA is an RNA. We have to always include the RNA in these discussions. It's not only about the effect on courses today. What they're really concerned about is the effect on courses 10 years from now, 15 years from now. Because if you wait too long to implement something, it's too late. You know, you implement fire safety systems before the fire happens.
yes.
So while I think they have gotten to the point when average driving distance reached 300 and on the PGA Tour and the number of drives over 350 yards was much more, I think they were like, all right, we are now at a level that we are uncomfortable with and we do not see this getting shorter. I mean, if you watch the U.S. amateur at all, these young people were hitting the golf ball distances that are staggering.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to build a golf course, well, how much area are you going to have to include to accommodate? I mean, you know, it gets kind of bizarre. And then the maintenance of that much land, it's expensive and it just, I can see why they want to do it. It's,
I've long been a proponent that certainly at the everyday level, no one's obsoleting golf courses. And PGA Tour is the elite of the elite, and physical superiority should be rewarded. But it is getting to a number that is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And even for me, I look at some of these things and, 500-yard holes were not meant to be played with driver 8-iron.
yes.
even if the 8-iron is the loft, really, of a 6-iron from 40 years
ago. Well, isn't that something, how the clubs have changed as well?
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So, speaking of clubs, why should everyone play a 7 or a 9 wood?
Well, if they don't, they're dumber than dirt.
Okay. Can you explain?
plain and simple, the high majority of everyday players are not skilled enough to hit a 5-iron or a 4-iron. And even if they are, they're not elevating the ball well enough. And honestly, this was my own journey. I mean, I used to be a very good player. I participated in the U.S. Amateur 40-plus years ago, was a scratch player. You know, I'm older now. My swing speed's down to like 94, 95 with a driver. And I just can't elevate a 4 or 5 iron. What I found was researching a story about 7-wood. I put a 7-wood in the bag, and that was really cool. And I'm like, well, let me try a 9-wood. And it was just life-altering. I mean, it goes so high. The forgiveness is so much better. It tears through the rough way better than any iron ever could. And the forgiveness factor is off the charts compared to an iron. And I'm like, I mean, I literally am more confident hitting my 9-wood into a green than I am a 6-iron.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, the way you sum that up makes it like, well, of course we'd be dumber than dumb.
it's, you know, again, why make the game harder than it needs to be? I just don't understand it. And quite frankly, if Dustin Johnson is good enough to have a 9-wood in the bag, I'm okay with it, too.
There you go. There you go. All right. And one more, because you have a if you got a question, you can send it into Golf Digest, and Mike Johnson or Mr. Statura will answer your question. Is that it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how do they send it into you?
They can send it in to editor@golfdigest.com, or they can just hit me up on Twitter @emichaelgw.
Oh, great. Isn't that great? I mean, that's perfect, because the final question is, why should you always tee an iron on a par 3?
Yeah, this is one of the great things about where I play golf is the people at my club are really curious about equipment. And a lot of these questions come from these guys just sitting on the patio. And one of them was like, hey, you used to throw your ball down on par 3s, but now you tee it up all the time. What gives? And the fact was, we had done some Arcos. We did not. Arcos, which is a shot tracking device system and has millions of golf shots that it tracks, found that irons on a tee were basically almost 10 yards farther across the board, you know, all but the very shortest of irons. But, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, even 9-iron, you were getting more distance, you were getting more height, and on a par 3, that's, wouldn't you like to hit one less club into a par 3? I know I would.
Yes.
And it's just, it's not just the tee itself. When the ball's on the ground, you tend to come into it a little steeper, which tends to give you more spin, and spin on an iron, while it's good for holding greens, robs you of distance. And the iron, you tend to come in a little shallower and make contact with the ball more the way it was intended to be. You get more of an optimum spin. That produces a nice high flight with appropriate spin, but you get the extra distance.
Mike Johnson, Senior Equipment Editor, Hot List Team Member, Golf Digest Magazine. You're not allowed to be away for this long. You have to be on the show more often.
Well, give me a call. You know I love doing it.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us today. It's just such an honor. Thank you.
Take care.
Aloha. All right, we're going to go straight without a commercial break, because there is Scott Reinhart, our PGA Master, Ledbetter Certified Golf Instructor, Director of Golf, the Dunes at Maui Lani, First Tee Hawaii Coordinator and Organizer. He's standing by. He's got an entire group of kids. They're ready for their first tee lesson. Welcome into the clubhouse, Scott.
Aloha, Danielle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good, absolutely. And we'll have to do it when you're not, like, you know, in a hurry to get the kids out there. Are you able to let them all hear what we're talking about?
Yes, they're all listening. In the background, we got the speaker up this morning. There's about 36 kids at the Dunes, and we've got otherwise going to have about 50 kids this morning.
Wow. And so you organize all the islands for the first tee.
I do. I oversee all the islands. We have a great coach, Jared Yim, at Alawai that oversees that program in Oahu because it's such a large island. We have over 750 kids right now active statewide in first tee. So Jared does a great job over there at Alawai, and I take care of basically all the outer islands and support him as well.
Okay. So is this the first day of their beginning of first tee lessons?
It is. This is the beginning of our session today on both islands. We also have some other islands coming up soon with Kauai coming up at the end of the month as well.
Yeah. In fact, it's, let me see, at Kiahuna Golf Club, it's going to be Saturday mornings starting September 28th, ages 7 to 9. Have their and, you know, then there's the ocean course at Hoku'ala. How do they get in touch with somebody to get this, you know, get their kids started?
That's absolutely correct. Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, Kiahuna Golf Club, that's Tommy Hines. He's going to be out there early mornings with the young kids, 7 to 9, ages 10 to 17 after that, Saturdays. And he also does a Tuesday class over at the ocean course at Hoku'ala. We have Juan Gonzalez, the golf pro over there, and he's doing great on Tuesday evenings. He'll be having classes from 7 to 11 years old, and everyone signs up the same way. It's really easy. You're going to go on our website. It's www.firstteehawaii.org, and that's all spelled out. That's FIRSTTEEHAWAII.org.
Why is it important?
Once you get on the website.
Yeah, go. So, I'm sorry.
Once you get on the website. No, that's my fault. Once they get on there, www.firsttehawaii.org, they click on the tab Register My Child, and they'll be able to see all the different offerings for all the different courses.
And why is it a good thing for kids to get into the first tee program as young as 7?
It's all about character. You know, we're building character, instilling the life-enhancing values. It's basically, we're teaching life skills through the game of golf. Golf is the medium that we're using, and we're just trying to shape children into what we call game changers. And we've actually built just a wonderful network of coaches, which basically are game changers themselves, creating game changers with the kids. So it's really a giving back program. So if you want to get involved from a coach aspect as well, when you're on that website, www.firstteehawaii.org, you can click on Get Involved tab, and you can sign up to get more information to be a volunteer and a coach and everything like that, which pays up to $30 an hour once they're fully trained.
Wow, that's good. Can I start?
please.
Now,
we're ready for you.
Yeah, you know, and the beauty of this is that the kids, now kids don't listen to what I say here. The kids don't even know they're learning life skills because they're having so much fun being together and playing this game of golf.
Well, that's the key. And, you know, as they progress through, the national opportunities from first tee start at age 14 and up, and that's where they can go to qualify to go to Pebble Beach if they have an 8.0 handicap or less to play in the Pure Insurance Open with the Senior Tour. They get flown out for a whole week. They have several leadership events. Well, they'll fly out 72 juniors age 14 and up to go through leadership and golf skills throughout a week at a special place like San Francisco or Minnesota was the last two. So it's just a wonderful opportunity, a wonderful organization.
Do you ever, you know, find like shy kids blossoming through golf?
That's exactly what it's all about. You know, you will see them the first week, and it's almost every kid. They have some sort of growth that happens over the first 5 weeks, and sometimes it's monumental where they might have a meltdown the week one where it's crying and this kind of thing, and then by week five it's like shaking your hand. Literally, this one gentleman, little Keenan Jace Sijalbo is his name, and crying meltdown week one, playing touchdown chipping. And then by week five, he's talking to our superintendent in a golf cart, asking him questions. You know, how do you do? What do you do for, your living? What do you do for fun? What's your favorite color? And that was the most mind-blowing conversation, to be honest with you.
That is so wonderful. That's the beauty of First Tee. I mean, it's just wonderful. And they're having fun with, you know, the same age group, and they're just all together, and some of them, and sometimes they're all, you know, younger, older, and the older help the younger, and it's beautiful. And thank you so much, Scott. It's 8 o'clock, and it's ready to go, right? I gotta let you go.
Yes, you're right. These kids, we're ready to have some fun. We're gonna go play some touchdown chipping and some baseball golf, and have a wonderful day.
And play for me, kids. Play for me, because I can't get on the golf course. So have some fun for me today, because that's what, you know, this is all about. The game is fabulous, and it's fun, and yeah, that's the way you're going to, you know, approach it. You just have fun, stay within your instructor's instructions, and I want to hear from somebody later in the season to find out just how much fun they're having and how much they enjoy the game. Scott Reinhart, PGA Master, Ledbetter Certified Golf Instructor, and the Director of Golf at the Dunes at Maui Lani, First Tee Hawaii. Yes, thank you so much for being inside.
Thank you so much,
Danielle. Aloha.
Thank you.
All right.
Aloha.
And we're going to come back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
I'm Colin Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghaus, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamula Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
K-O-R-L, Waianae, Honolulu. Aloha Power's darn hot fall sale, because, you know, fall is tomorrow. It starts the season. It's Aloha Power's darn hot, it is darn hot, the fall sale with riding mowers from homeowner to the supersized landscapers for everyone, regardless of the size. They're all in stock. Mower accessories galore, and they're all available now. Mow it, blow it, bag it, and you're done. You let your equipment do the work that way. Your body doesn't end up, you know, in pain, and it's still fire season, folks. Protect your property with the heat and the dryness. You've got to make sure that everything's cut back for your property and for your neighbor. We ship off island. New shipments with the latest features arrive daily. Aloha Power Equipment, Iwile, next to the Costco gas station, and in Waipahu. Now, if you're driving down Farrington Highway and you're heading Eva bound, so you're, you know, in Waipahu, and stay in the left lane, because you're going to make a left turn at Waipahu Depot Street. And then you'll see this big sign that says Aloha Power Equipment. There it is, right there. And of course, if you're going in the Koko headbound direction, you're in the right lane, because you're going to make a nice right turn there. And bingo, there they are. Aloha Power Equipment. Tell them Danielle sent you.
Poipu Bay on Kauai South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box, see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come, join the aloha at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
All right, the weather forecast. Okay, today, if you're going to go out and play a round of golf, let me give you the tee times first, and then I'll tell you what weather you're going to be playing in. At Volcano, there's an 8:38, kind of late for the 8:38, unless you're really close. But there's a 9:10 and a 10:48, and the Lava Spotters are going out to play a round of golf today at Volcano Golf Club. And at Makalei, there's an 8:50 and a 10:06. At Manele Bay, there's a 10:06. That's on Lanai. And Kauai, the Poipu Golf Course, is still nine holes. I think they're still working on the bunkers. There's a 9:10, an 11:40, a 12:30, and a 1:30. At Kauai Lagoons, we've got a 10:10 and an 11:20. Before I go on to Oahu, I just want to make sure that you know when you go to Poipu, you can play nine or you can do the nine over again. So that's 9:10 is the tee time, 11:40, 12:30, or 1:30 at Poipu. Hawaii Kai on Oahu, 8:32 and a 9:48. Turtle Bay, we have an 8:42, a 9:16, and an 11 o'clock. And the Corona Limes are headed out on the golf course this morning. I'm sure they're all going to hit the sweet spot every time, enjoying their Corona Limes. There's the Royal Hawaiian Country Club, an 8:58, a 10:10, a 12 o'clock. And the Bridesmaids are heading out on the golf course today. Bayview has an 8:30 and a 9:30 and a 10:30. And then there is at the Gold Course on Maui, a 10:10, a 10:50, and an 11 o'clock. Emerald has an 11:20. And we've got at Maui Nui an 8:30, a 9:30, and a 10:40. And I think I've made a mistake, not in the tee times, but in just mentioning that the 30th anniversary of Seabury Hall, they're having a tournament, and that is going to be fantastic to be a part of, and may you all hit the sweet spot every time. All right, and the other one is, at Kapalua, they've just finished the aeration, and so, give them a call. They may have a tee time for you. Oahu, today through Wednesday, and Kauai, we've got the same, It's going to be windward and Mauka, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Leeward, partly cloudy with isolated showers. High, 85 to 91. Low, 71 to 77. And the trades, 10 to 20 miles per hour. Now we go to Maui, and they're going to have scattered showers, mainly before noon. Partly sunny with a high near 77. Breezy with east northeasterly winds 11 to 17, gusts as high as 24, and a chance of precipitation 30%. On the Big Island, mostly sunny, calm wind becoming north about 6 miles an hour. Tonight it'll be partly cloudy with a low, in some places 46. I don't think the entire island's going to have 46. But yes, so that's what's going on in the world. Tea times, weather, and right after this, Michael Patrick Shields is going to be inside the clubhouse. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
The Golf Club tip number 81. Don't throw your bag in the pond. You'll want your car keys and wallet when driving home. Now, back to the Golf Club with Danielle Tucker.
Michael Patrick Shields, Hollywood insider, radio talk show host, author, travel writer, host of the Michigan's Big Show with Michael Patrick Shields, one of the top award-winning syndicated talk shows in the United States of America. His base is Beverly Hills, and he's my travel guru extraordinaire because he's never in one spot for very long. Welcome into the clubhouse, Michael Patrick.
And to think we met over 20 years ago on the island of, I think it was the Big Island.
Was it the, I thought it was Maui.
Maybe.
It was probably the Big Island, but I remember the picture that we have of the two of us sitting at a table together. It's just, it's such a cool picture. It's always in my mind when we talk. Oh, by the way.
Sweet.
Yes, you know, I saw a video of you being interviewed by, oh, what was his name? He has a very interesting name. Let's see now.
Was it Larry King?
No, it was not.
No. Johnny Carson?
Johnny Carson. Wait a minute.
Merv Griffin by Wait a minute.
Wait a second. You know, I thought we said aloha to, you know, Johnny Carson a long time ago.
Maybe it was David Frost or Dick Cavett.
They're all those guys. You've been interviewed by them all. You're like, you're an amazing person. The guy that I'm thinking of is, what do we do?
Oh, yeah. He's a financial guy from Detroit. The What Do We Do podcast. He's with Great Lakes Wealth. And I was wearing an orange blazer and shorts, which was a terrible choice because I didn't realize my legs would be visible until I got to the set. Yep.
Well, I was actually not thinking about your choice of clothing, although I totally understand it gets cold in those studios. You'd want to have a pair of slacks on. But I was thinking more along the line of, isn't it weird having somebody ask you questions?
Yes, very much. Historically, talk show hosts like to be in charge, and there are historic examples of some of them who you would never want to meet in person because they're not really sociable, because the only time they seem sociable is when they're on camera or on the microphone and in control of the situation. Rush Limbaugh, for instance, was famously not personable. If you ever met him, he only liked to be in control on the air. I don't know, but you're personable, so you're an exception to the reality there.
I think part of it has to do with being shy. You know, a lot of guys who are on the mic, they're also a little reticent about meeting people because they're, you know, maybe I'm just giving them a break. I don't know.
No, I think there's something about that. And it never makes sense to say, well, if you're shy, why would you go into entertainment? Why would you step on a stage? Why would you go in front of a camera, you know, if you're insecure? And the reason that you do it is because of your insecurity, you need feedback that comes in the way of applause or recognition. You can't, you can't handle life without it. So you're willing so badly. Do you need that recognition that you're willing to risk yourself on a stage? And I know, and you know, there are tour players who would love to win a tournament and love to score well, but at one point in the round near the end, they start to dread the fact that they're going to have to go on camera and be interviewed and on a stage there and do a little press conference.
Oh, yes.
And they hate that kind of thing. And you think, you know, if you're going to play a solitary game like golf and compete at golf where it isn't a team sport, you probably like to be alone, but you can't be when you win because they put you right in front of the camera.
That's right. It's like, oh, my God. And then you have to answer politely.
Yeah, as best you can.
Oh, as best you can is right. As best you can. So, Kate, now, Hollywood. You were a Michiganer? Is that what Michigan people are, Michiganers?
There's always been a debate whether it's Michiganese, Michigander, or Michiganian.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea there was a debate. I lived in Michigan for a while.
For you.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I where I got to grow up as a toddler, you know, 4 years old, 3 years old. Gorgeous place. Here you are, based in Hollywood, in Beverly Hills, and you're like an actor now, Michael Patrick, and we can see you on television, and Let's Make a Deal, and The Talk. What's it like being on the set of Let's Make a Deal?
Oh, that is fun, and if you ever come to Los Angeles or anybody listening and want to be on a game show, sign up for Let's Make a Deal because it's a party. First of all, you have to wear a costume, and they will do a little video chat with you before you're accepted, and they say, what's your costume going to be? And they want to see if you're going to be lively, so you put on a little bit of a show before you go to the show. But it doesn't cost anything, and it's like Halloween when you get there. Everybody else has a costume, and they have a little party in the back room so that everybody gets to know each other and everybody's in a good mood, and it's easy to talk to people because you have the icebreaker of a costume. So they keep you back there for about 2 hours. And no cocktails, by the way, this morning. But, I mean, that wouldn't bother me, but there were no cocktails. And then when you go out there, everybody is supportive of each other, and they keep it to a limited audience. So there's a very good chance that you will get to play some sort of game as they tape two episodes. So you'll probably have a chance to win something.
Wow.
And it's a really good time, and it's a nice operation. They have a dedicated studio. Now, my episode will be on probably in about a month and a half. And I'll be visible for two episodes because I was right behind Wayne Brady. That's where they seated me. And very comfortable seating, by the way. And my game, I probably shouldn't tell this, but I was chosen to play a $500 game of rock, paper, scissors with Wayne Brady. And by the way, you know, you can win trips on there, too, and some of them are really nice.
Yeah, but yeah.
I would ask you, if Wayne Brady walked up to you, Danielle, and said, okay, for $500, rock, paper, scissors, what would you have put out?
Paper.
See? It happens fast, doesn't it? You have to make a decision immediately. Yes. On camera, live.
Right.
And you would have put paper, huh? So you would have tied Wayne Brady, and you would have had to have gone again. So it's unpredictable what would have happened.
Wow.
Because paper ties paper. But
so what did you say?
I put rock. So you would have beaten me.
Because I could wrap you up with my paper.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened with Wayne Brady. So I lost the chance to win $500 right on TV. And I don't know why I said this, because it all happens fast, and there's music and lights and cameras, and I just said, balls!
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to edit that out, or it stays in, or anything like that, but that's what happened.
Well, it's not a bad word to say, you know?
I guess not.
Darn would have been maybe more, like, I don't know. You know, another show you've been at is The Talk.
Yeah, that's another nice and easy one. If you're coming here and you want to do that, it's a live show, so you're in and out of there quickly. It's over at CBS Radford, so you get to see a little of behind the scenes of the set and some of the old homes where they shot TV shows and movies. They walk you right through there, and it's Jerry O'Connell, who was in the movie Jerry Maguire, as one of the hosts, and he's married to Rebecca Romijn. And Natalie Morales is one of the other hosts. And almost always you will leave with a prize. It's an hour talk show. Really fun, high energy, good music. And they go out in the audience and they visit with the crowd. I mean, it's a very, very nice show. It's largely women, but I was a man there. And sure enough, I'll tell you, about a week later, I was at Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel with my friend Madeline Austin, who is a PR lady and professional, and she had taken me on a press trip to Belize, to Serenian Bay Resort, 2 years before that. So we were at the bar talking about Belize and our trip to Belize, and we hadn't seen each other since then. And Jimmy, the bartender at Polo Lounge, says, my honeymoon was in Belize. And we said, no kidding. I said, how did you like it? He said, well, I went after about 2 days up to the valet guy, and I said, you know, what is there to do around here? I'm kind of bored. And first we started laughing at the prospect of being bored on your honeymoon. And then when the laughter died down, he said that the valet told him, well, there's a bowling alley a couple blocks from here. And so Jimmy walked over to the bowling alley and had himself a couple of hours of bowling and having a beer or whatever. He said he had a really nice time. I tell you this because life is funny. When I went to the talk a week later, what did I win? And everyone in the audience won this. 3-night stay in Belize at a resort called the La Rubea in Palencia. Mm-hmm. So I texted the picture to Jimmy and I said, you're never going to believe this. I just won a trip to Belize on the talk. And he said, La Rubea, that's where my honeymoon was. I said, bowling alley, here I come.
That's exactly. I was going to ask, before you even went there, did they have a bowling alley?
Well, I'm going to go to Jimmy's bowling alley if I go on this trip to Belize.
Wow.
So anyway, if you go to the talk, you know, you might win a gift card or something else, but you might win a trip, too.
A trip to Belize.
Being there.
How far is Belize from Los Angeles?
Oh, it's not that far. It's easy to get to, and so it's very popular. And then the thing is, if you go to Palencia from the main airport, you either have to get a three-hour cab ride, or you can take a little puddle jumper flight. I guess you know about those in the Hawaiian Islands.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did. And I had to have about three, what did I have, mojitos, I think, maybe in that airport bar before I was getting on that little plane.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
pretty.
Yeah. So where have you been traveling, or are you just doing like game shows and acting?
I've been doing a lot of these shows here in Los Angeles and auditions and what have you, but I have a big spate of travel coming up. I'm going on a crystal cruise, which I've never done before, and that's going to leave from Puerto Rico. And I'm very intrigued by crystal cruises because it's a small cruise line, and they don't even like the word luxury because they say we're beyond luxury.
Oh, my.
So, you know, I would like to know what is beyond luxury. And I'm going to find out on Crystal Cruises in December. They have Gloria Gaynor going on one of their cruises in October. Can you imagine singing karaoke with Gloria Gaynor on a ship?
No.
I will survive. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes, it would.
So,
yes, why not? I could be completely off key as usual.
No. So they have these intriguing sailings, and it's going to leave from Puerto Rico, which you know is a great golf destination. And Brad Dean at Visit Puerto Rico, who knew Chichi Rodriguez very well, who we lost recently.
Yeah.
In fact, the only times I met Chichi was in Puerto Rico, and they were very memorable times. But they've got famous golf courses there like the Rio Mar and El Conquistador and Dorado Beach and Royal Isabella. So I'm going to mess around in Puerto Rico for a little while and have a look at what's going on in San Juan and then climb aboard the Crystal Ship, which will conclude in Fort Lauderdale. And then I'm going to see a place I'm very intrigued to see, the Boca Raton Club, for a couple of days. They have a yacht club and a resort that's sort of semi-private right on the ocean. And then down to Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel right before Christmas, get the Joe's Stone Crab. And Lowe's is right on the beach, too, and it's right at the foot of the Lincoln Square Mall, and so it's a really good spot for walking and enjoying the beach, and you know how much I love Miami. So that's not all the way until December.
Wow. Doesn't this sound fantastic? I mean, you should be a travel, not an agent, but an advisor, a travel advisor. At some point.
Well, I kind of am as a travel writer. You
yes,
can read all these
this is
columns,
true.
This
where can we get all your columns?
GoWorldTravel.com is a good place. TravelTattler.org is another good place. And my latest book is called Travel Tattler, Less Than Torrid Tales, and that is available at Amazon.com, Travel Tattler.
Yes.
You know, that previous book I wrote with Ken Rayner, who you've interviewed on the show, I call him Mr. President.
Yes.
Stories of Golf, Fishing, and Life with George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yes.
Is, I think, very interesting right now because of what happened with Donald Trump at his golf club in Palm Beach. Because, you know, the Secret Service is wondering, can we protect a president while he plays golf? And that book is full of golf stories with President Bush and President Clinton and the George W. Bush and Ken Rayner. He's played more golf with presidents than any other PGA professional ever. And if you were to go to Kennebunkport, you could walk right up to their golf course. There's no fence. There's no hedge, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So you could have an inside look. And he'll be at the President's Cup, Ken Rayner will, this coming week in Montreal.
Wow.
If you want to talk to him, I'll connect you.
But oh, I would love
to. Seems suitable that he's at the President's Cup, given that he's the golf professional to the president.
Yes, I think I would like that. I would like that connection. Please. Yes.
Absolutely.
When was the first time you had a scotch? I want to get this in before the end of the show, because I was like, when did you have your first scotch?
In high school, I saw that movie Arthur with Dudley Moore and John Gielgud. I loved that movie. And he was drinking scotch, and he looked like he was having fun. And I'm like, I guess we ought to try drinking scotch. When did you have your first Mai Tai?
Oh, never was really into Mai Tais.
Oh.
I'm weird. I'm coffee.
Okay. Well, that's a good place for that, too.
Yes.
Kona, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of drinks that I like, but I just vodka. Yeah, vodka. Fair. Vodka. Yeah. You don't get a headache with it. That's what they say, right? That's what I always worry about, getting the headache the day after. Oh, where am I going with this? And Havana, Cuba.
Yes.
When you go there, mm-hmm. what would be the thing you do if you went to Havana, Cuba?
The thing you do are the things you're not supposed to do because of the trade embargo with the United States. So you have to be a little careful, and I have to be a little careful advising you on those kinds of things.
Oh, excuse me.
If you have a Canadian passport or you're European or you're willing to take a little bit of a risk, the Kempinski has a beautiful Grand Manzana, which means the Big Apple, funny enough, in the middle of Havana, right next to the Central Park, which is about the size of a short par three, the Central Park. Nevertheless, Central Park, and then it's right next to the Capitol, which is purposely built, I think, a few feet taller than the U.S. Capitol, and it's an exact sort of replica, so that's kind of funny. The time that thing was built, you know, there was this competition with the United States, but that's the hotel. It's right across from a bar called the Floridita, which has $5 daiquiris and live music and a life-size statue of Ernest Hemingway at the bar. And, you know, he frequented that, and he had a home in Havana you can visit also. That's super fun. There's live music at every meal, and you can walk along the Malecon and feel like you've gone back in time because the cars are all, you know, half a century old. And it's beautiful people, beautiful culture, and I hope that somehow the political situation one day can finally get ironed out. But until then, it's good to see now because you can see what it's like before it gets gentrified when that happens.
Oh, yeah, this is true. But so are we allowed to go to Havana, Cuba?
You can go there. There are just places you're not supposed to spend money, like hotels that are owned by the Cuban government or restaurants that are owned by the Cuban government. So you just, if you want to be above the board entirely, you just avoid that. And they have all sorts of private housing and certain hotels that are okay, and restaurants, too.
So you have to do a little bit of legwork before you head off to Havana or Cuba,
yes,
in general.
Or check with a travel company, and they'll do it for you.
Right on. And you're going to connect me with Ken Rayner, and I really, really appreciate that. Looking forward to it very much.
I Call Him Mr. President is his book, and Ken Rayner will call you.
Yes, I like what you were talking with the fellow that you had the conversation with on YouTube, in your shorts with the jacket. Nice jacket, by the way. radio is entertaining. It has to be entertaining. It was really good listening to you talk about the power of radio. It just made me feel good. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse. Thank you for all your tips. Thank you for your insights, and I want to go be in the world of the talk after this. Thank you, Michael Patrick.
Thank you for keeping radio creative yourself.
Thank you. Okay, let's thank the people who make this show possible, since we're thinking, you know, it's Aloha Power's darn hot fall sale, and it's been darn hot. It's Aloha Power's darn hot fall sale with riding mowers, homeowner-sized, super-sized, the landscapers all in stock. Mower accessories galore. That is, they're, you know, you mow it, blow it, bag it, with everything put together. It's all available at Aloha Power Equipment. So let your equipment do the work. It's still fire season. You need to protect your property. And we ship off-island. New shipments with the latest features arriving daily. Aloha Power Equipment, Evile, next to the Costco gas station and in Waipahu. And, of course, Stretch Lab. You know, go and do this. It's so good for your game. It's good for your body. You'll learn how to stretch. In this case, it's one-on-one assisted stretching. Sessions just like the pros get to improve your flexibility and your swing and your overall well-being. It's at Kahala Mall, Kailua, and the Ward Center. The Honolulu Sign Company, branding banks and shopping centers and businesses and hotels since 1939. They can't find you without your sign. And the Aloha Section PGA, teach your children to play golf. It's the gift that lasts forever for self, health, and friendship. Go golf. And I've turned this phone off so many times and it still rings. I hope I haven't driven you insane. Thank you very much for your mana, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2024.